You're listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. We're always blessed with our guests, blessed with our listeners, but we're particularly blessed this morning because we're joined by Dr. Alison Goodwin from New Zealand Doctor, speaking out on science. Truly, truly magnificent woman, standing up so bravely, following her Hippocratic Oath. I wonder if they do make an oath. Do they make an oath? We'll have to ask her. And I imagine expecting doctors in their droves to follow them. They didn't. Still don't. And we're also joined by a brave man speaking at Barry Duffield, and we're talking about their roadshow, Safe and Effective Roadshow, touring the South Island. Good morning, Dr. Alison. Oh, Dr. Goodwin, what am I saying?
Morning, Rodney. Nice to be here.
Lovely, and good morning to you, Barry.
Good morning, Rodney.
I'll come to you, Barry, shortly, but I watched your statement, video clip, and it broke my heart. And here was you, a man, so healthy and so fit and so strong, the sort of man that we all want to be. You did what you were told by the government, took your two jabs for summer, keep the country safe. And the day after, you were extraordinarily sick and broken. Unbelievable story. It broke my heart. So I'm very, very humbled to have you on our show.
I'm just glad that you've given us a platform.
Well, you have great courage in speaking up. Now, Dr. Goodwin, we know all about your great work with New Zealand Doctors Speaking on Science. Tell us about the roadshow, because you've just had two big conferences, one in Christchurch, one in Auckland, which must have been monumental to put on and to make what was clearly a resounding success. And I couldn't go, got little kids, and then I got FOMO, because it just looked so wonderful to have all those people in one place. Not only did you achieve all that, but now you're on the road touring the South Island. What's the purpose?
Right, well, yes, the conferences were, a monumental amount of work behind the scenes went on, and I was on the peripheries of that, so I have to give a big shout out to both the Annas and to Cindy for doing the bulk of the work for that. So the roadshow that's coming up isn't specifically organised by us. So we're several of us, NZDSOS members, are speakers in the roadshow, but we're not organising it as such. So it's in November in the South Island and also Wellington, starting on the 9th of November in Dunedin, and then going to Queenstown, then to Nelson, then to Wellington. So four different venues, and it's a whole day. Again, I'm not organising it, so I'm not fully across it, but a whole day, as far as I understand, with maybe 10, 12, 15 speakers. I think some speakers will be different in different venues. There'll be local people speaking at each venue, and then a core team that'll speak at each venue or at all the venues.
Well, I'm very excited because in Queenstown you've got the wonderful Mary Hobbs, who's become a very close friend of mine. Listeners will be familiar with her being interviewed and her writings. Wonderful, wonderful woman. And I've never met her, which is a funny thing these days, isn't it? And yet we're very close. Yes. Because we're always in communication and we're members of the same tribe, as it were. And I get to meet her for the first time, so I'm very, very excited about that. Alison, how is it? Well, first of all, what's your reading of where the public are, and then we'll do the doctors, where the public are now on this whole COVID thing? When I say public, the people that aren't us, the ones that thought it was all overblown to begin with, where do you think the public that agreed with Jacinda, agreed that they had to be locked up, locked down, agreed that they needed these jabs, and have come out the other side, what are they thinking now, in your estimation?
Oh, well, look, it's hard to know. It's hard to know. I do think there are a growing number of people who are aware that things aren't quite right. You know, and I guess they'll be on a sliding scale or on a spectrum of people who realise that things are significantly wrong to people who are just sort of feeling, well, maybe that's a little bit weird, that's a little bit odd. I think there'll still be people who think everything was fine and that nothing was done wrong, and that we perhaps should do it all again if we came across another pandemic. But hopefully those people are few that think it's all right. And I think, yes, increasingly people, you know, they may not be able to name exactly what it is or say what it is, but have a feeling that things aren't right.
Because the difficulty for them in accepting it, and of course this happened to me, is that if you see through it, you fall down a deep hole, right?
Well, yeah,
because absolutely. You have to say the media are wrong, the government was wrong, or the WHO was wrong, the teachers were wrong, all these institutions, the doctors were wrong, all these institutions in which we place our implicit trust and our lives, you have to say to yourself, they were wrong on this. That's a hard thing to do.
Well, yes, it's quite destabilizing, you know, yeah. To appreciate that, you know, all the institutions, you know, and I mean, I knew medicine, you know, the pharmaceutical industry had an undue influence, but I had no appreciation of how biased the media was. I had no appreciation of how corrupt our legal system was, the police. I've got family members who have been police people, but, you know, how they behaved. You know, yes, every sort of institution that we've relied on has become questionable. And, you know, it is. It's a scary, destabilizing place to go there. And so some people don't want to go there. Don't, you know, it's too much. It's too much to think, well, if I can't trust that and I can't trust that and I can't trust that, who can I trust?
Did you expect to be vilified?
I knew I was sort of stepping into a place where there were forces that didn't want what I was wanting to say to be said.
But the power and extent of it, did that surprise you?
Well, I was surprised to be suspended. I mean, I had been a doctor for sort of 25 years, 26 years at the time, and, you know, I'd done my best to follow the guidelines and the standards of the medical council and, you know, had wanted to create health for people or help people be healthy. I hadn't done anything. You know, I was coming from a place of wanting the best for people and wanting people to be fully informed and people to be able to make decisions. You know, I personally believe that people are intelligent enough to listen to different advice from a variety of angles, weigh it out for themselves and make their own decisions, whereas some other forces decided, well, actually, people can only hear this sort of information and they need to be told what to do. But, yeah, that's not sort of my position. I'd rather people were fully informed, ask questions, ask more questions, weigh it up, and then make their own decisions.
Where are doctors on this? Are more and more doctors waking up, or are they head in sand?
Oh, well, look, again, it's hard to know because there's no sort of forum where the different views can come together and thrash it out. I mean, I personally believe that doctors that are working in the system currently must be seeing a tsunami of ill health and sickness in demographics that would be highly unusual. And they will be having patients. I imagine every doctor will be having patients come to them and say, tell them, you know, I think my problems are due to the vaccine. And I mean, we know that some of the doctors are absolutely fully aware of what's going on and that the tsunami of adverse events that they're seeing is definitely due to the vaccine. But, you know, they're still not prepared to say anything because they've seen what happens when you say something.
Yes, indeed. You get your head on a pike. stuck on a spike, stuck up, waved over the gates to the town, and as a lesson to anyone who might speak out. And that's why they keep being so derogatory, because the only people that want to censor you are people that aren't telling the truth.
Well, I think it's less derogatory now, but more just sort of ignoring the elephant. You know, the elephant is getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Well, we'll come to that.
And,
yeah, because I never believed that the vaccine would injure people. So I thought it was risky, and I'd worked out that they were telling us wrong stuff. I hadn't even got myself to the place that they were lying. But I thought, they can't know that. I knew that COVID wasn't the big scare that they were making out. And I thought to myself, there's no way they can know that vaccine's safe. And then I read that it was going to enter my cell and take over my cells and start producing a foreign protein and putting it into my body. And I thought, that sounds crazy. They can't know it's safe. But, you know, you wouldn't vaccinate the whole world unless you were pretty certain. But I still didn't take it. But I didn't believe people that were telling me that people were being injured until I got to the protest and I met them. And because I hadn't believed it, it hit me so hard. Because these were genuine people in pain and suffering who were doubly injured. Injured by the vaccine and then injured by the gaslighting. Now, tell us, are we past the peak of the injuries? Are they still growing? Are people finding as they go down the track? I mean, it's hard to tell, but is it? I mean, the stats that I see, but it might be a consequence of who I follow on social media, suggest that it's growing and growing and growing. Is that right?
Well, again, it's difficult to get actual data. It's very hard to get the numbers. I mean, for cancer, for instance, you know, the numbers are 2 or 3 or 4 years behind. So difficult to say. But, I mean, I did listen to a surgeon in the UK recently, and he sort of described, I think it was about three different waves of injuries that he's seen, starting off with the initial clotting and bleeding sort of shortly after the vaccine. In the short term, and then in the medium term, autoimmune conditions where the immune system attacks proteins, which, you know, maybe, you know, proteins made by the vaccine or the contents of the vaccine that may be similar to human proteins. And so you're getting an attack on your own body cells, you know, various body cells. So that was the second wave. And then the third wave is these cancers in young people, cancers that are rapidly progressive, cancers that are widespread at the time they're diagnosed. And so, I mean, anecdotally, I mean, you're looking at newspaper articles, talking to people on the street. There's more sudden deaths, more unexplained deaths, more deaths in young people. And these weird and wonderful conditions. I mean, there's forever articles in the paper with a rare autoimmune condition. No connection made to the vaccine. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know the numbers. Anecdotally, I think probably the numbers but are that increasing.
That in itself is scary, because the easiest thing for the officials to do would have been to keep records and make them available of the vaccinated and the unvaccinated and be comparing them.
Well, exactly. And I mean, that's exactly what should be done and should still be done. And I mean, each individual GP could potentially do an audit of their patients. They could look at their vaccinated patients, look at their unvaccinated patients and see, well, how many times have I seen each, you know, the people in each group? How many times have they been to hospital? How many new diagnoses are there? How many deaths are there? In each group and figure that out. That would be fairly straightforward for each individual GP to do. But it could also be done on a national scale. I mean, New Zealand's got a population of 5 million. We're all in their Aotearoa immunisation register, you know, whether you're vaccinated or not. So they could easily divvy it up into vaccinated, unvaccinated New Zealanders and look at various rates of conditions. That could easily be done.
I hop in a lift with you and I say, oh, you're that Dr. Alison Goodwin, aren't you? And you say, yes. And I look at you and I say, you're speaking out on that vaccine. And you say, yes. And I say, well, what makes you think it's hurting people? And the elevator's got like a couple of minutes to go. What do you say to me?
Well, I'd say that I looked at what was being spoken about before the vaccine was released into the population, what side effects were expected. I've looked at the state of the technology and what the potentials are for it. I've looked at the conditions of the provisional consent, which said that their, you know, autoimmune conditions was a particular concern and they still needed safety data from other aspects of it. But, you know, the most important thing, you know, when you're a doctor, one of the first things you taught is the bulk of your diagnostic information comes from the history, from listening to the patient speak. And I have listened to, now, not, I mean, not huge numbers. I mean, Barry is one of the people I have listened to his story, but I've listened to, you know, a number of other people's stories. And when the patient says, I was perfectly fine, I had the vaccine, and then A, B, C, D, E started within days, weeks, or a month or two of the vaccine, and I've had all the tests, there's no other cause. I mean, that to me, that, you know, I mean, the patients are right until I've got a good reason to believe that they're not right. Yes, you know, indeed. So I'm believing their stories, and the stories repeatedly say the same thing. I was fine, now I've got this weird and wonderful condition. Now my brother dropped dead. Now my auntie's got a blood clot. You know, multiple stories. And from my research into what's been going on behind the scenes, assessing whether the vaccine's related or not, I have no confidence that the proper processes have been followed through to assess, you know, like Barry's story, assess, well, was it, is it due to the vaccine? Are there multiple problems that he's faced due to the vaccine? Who's actually looked at it and made that determination? And what is the process for making that determination? I tried to find out, my probably 2 minutes are running out, but I did put quite a bit of effort in 2021 to find out what the process would be when, as a GP, when I reported a vaccine injury, what process it would go through. And I was not reassured by the answers that I got.
Mm. It's important that we have this roadshow, because the heat's dying down, and so it's an opportunity for people to bring friends and family along to hear what to them is the other side, is it not?
Well, yes. I mean, to me, that's the most important thing. I mean, it's all very well preaching to the converted and reiterating what people already know, but yes, it's much more important for the people who, you know, if you know that your auntie's got something that you think's related to the vaccine, or somebody that you know needs to hear this, then I think those are the people that ideally we want to reach.
Mm.
Are the people who aren't aware that their medical conditions could well be related to the vaccine.
And are you going to each and every venue?
Yes, I'm intending to, yeah.
Great. Oh, well, I'll see you in Queenstown. I can't wait to catch up with you again. Now, let me jump across, Barry. You're a New Zealand-based filmmaker. You act,
yeah,
you
right.
write, you do sometimes direct. People will know you from Young Hercules, Xena Warrior Princess, AFK, and most prominently as the Germanic warrior, is it Lugo and Spartacus?
Lugo, yeah.
Lugo. And I've got to say, man, you did a lot of work in the gym. You were like Arnold Schwarzenegger, man. You were
not quite that big.
Not quite. But man, you just had a magnificent body and you were so fit and vital, like just what every young boy would want to be.
You know, I still train, Rodney, but I just had to tailor things to the way my body's conditioned now.
So you were fit and healthy, built like, as they say, a brick outdoor toilet.
My wife puts it well. She said, you look like a small windowless building on legs.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. You were magnificent, man. And every boy wants to be like that. And you were. And you worked out 6 times a week, I think you said.
Yeah, 6-day-a-week trainer.
And lifting heavy weights.
Oh, I pushed a few pounds in my day.
So you went along to get a vaccine. Did you have any concerns in getting it?
Oh, I was completely opposed to it. Had I not?
Oh, you were opposed to it. You didn't want to take it.
100%.
Because you cared about your body and were careful what you put in it.
Oh, at times. In all honesty, I was more worried. I knew what the facts were. I'd heard that it was, you know, 99% chance of survival, 1% chance of it affecting you. You had to be pretty much out of shape or in the elderly groups to really warrant getting a vaccine. So I just didn't think I needed it.
Wow. So why'd you get it?
Well, I did a show called Spartacus, and that show was the little show that just kept on giving. So I had the opportunity to do conventions. This one was coming up for Paris, and I had one in the States in Mississippi. So to travel, I had to have the vaccine, and I'd signed contracts for these things, so I didn't want to let these people down. And I also work as a part-time, my job in a gym, and I couldn't set foot back in the gym unless I'd been vaccinated.
So you were compelled to by your work and needing to care for yourself and your family?
100%.
You had the first jab?
Yeah, on the 10th of August.
No problem?
21. No problem at all.
Had the second jab?
It was on the 16th of September 21. On the 17th of September 21, I couldn't walk up and down my own driveway. Heart palpitations, breathing issues, crawling skin, fluid retention. I had this thing where my gag reflex blocked where I couldn't get onto a cardio machine without feeling like a balloon had blown up under my chest. It was horrendous.
From a medical point of view, Dr. Goodwin, given the proximity and time, the first thing you'd say is, vaccine.
Well, I would, yes, but well, it didn't seem to be.
That's the rules, right? You know, what happened to make you sick? Oh, you got
the
jab.
Well, that's right. And, the patient's story, he's telling you, I got the vaccine and then all these symptoms arrived. So, of course, that would be my first protocol. But, the doctors in the hospitals had been threatened, I guess, with anything that was an anti-vaccination messaging, you would face consequences. And I guess admitting that something might be due to the vaccine could be construed as an anti-vaccine message. And so doctors, it seemed to be an unwritten rule that you couldn't attribute anything to the vaccine when you were diagnosing people with all these conditions that happened after the vaccine.
Barry, you look like if something came your way, like a bad virus, you'd just bat it off. With your strength and power of your body, you wouldn't have been a sickly person.
I've never been sick a day in my life. I can't remember the last time I went to hospital. I am going to clarify that. I can't remember a day I was sick in my life. Today I'm off work. I'm quite crook. So I just got the flu. But I can tell you this. I started getting the tremors shortly after that second shot as well. So it started out like a thumb twitch, finger twitch. Eventually worked its way all the way up to my shoulder. After I had had that second shot, I had a space of around 4 months before I got to see a cardiologist. So I kept saying to myself, it's all in your head, it's in your head. It was the inability to be able to get out of bed, the inability to walk up and down the driveway. I was going, this has just got to be a head game. It can't be. I was in full denial that it was the vaccine. So when I finally got to see a cardiologist after around 4 months, whatever I'd had as far as heart inflammation potentially that had been there had disappeared, and I got diagnosed with cardiomyopathy. My doctor, when I went to see him and I gave him the dates and I said, listen, are you willing to talk about the vaccine? He shut me down straight away.
No.
There was no discussion of this whatsoever. Absolutely shut me down. And not only did he shut me down, when I was having a heart scan with the nurse in the room, he laughed and said, and it was like not full on laughing like some Bond villain, but just that chuckle. And he goes, well, there goes your conspiracy theories, Barry.
And since that date, you've had ongoing health issues.
Oh yeah, the tremors have got to a really bad state.
I can see that from here.
It was only in my left arm, so it's only the arm I ever had those shots in. I got diagnosed with Parkinson's, which then changed to Parkinsonisms and bounced back to Parkinson's, and I got put onto a Parkinson's drug. Where I got, I don't know if you saw this in my interview, but I got the double whammy. So I got onto a Parkinson's drug that made me, after 8 weeks when I got to full dosage, made me dissociative, where I went home and I took a handful of sleeping tablets and I tried to hang myself in a cupboard with zero memory of it. So I'm like that, a two-time survivor.
Wow. You took sleeping pills, a handful, tried to hang yourself in the cupboard and you don't remember.
On a drug called Cinemet.
And you don't remember it?
Zero memory of it. I remember waking up in the hospital with my wife sitting beside the bed.
She'd be beside herself.
Hearing somebody screaming for their mother. Yeah, I thought it was my neighbour. I had no idea where I was. And it was. That's the worst thing about it, Rodney, is the people around you, how it affects them.
I'm speechless. I'm very, very sorry. I'm speechless.
Yeah, you know, the Cinemet was a byproduct of it was. I can only see it one way. I've had the vaccine. I've been injured by the vaccine. They've tried to come up with some excuse for anything but vaccine and put me onto another drug that's almost killed me. So it's almost it's twice. So it's not. It's difficult to explain. But it's a, it's just this, every time they make an excuse for something, they put me onto something else. And I can't take another drug now. I can't take a pharmaceutical drug now. It terrifies me. So
a bit.
Absolutely scares the shit out of me. But every time that I've been in for something now, so I've been in for urinary tract infections, one after the other, prostate infections. So I was peeing blood, ejaculating blood. I get a fixed for the problem that at the time, and they were saying this is just an individual problem, but not seeing the trees and the forest for the trees. So all these ailments I've been getting, no one's wanted to put them all together. And timeline, the only person that's listened to me has been Alison, who put together a history of my timeline for my health, which ultimately, hopefully, we can use somewhere. In fact, I told my doctor that if I should die, knock on wood that I don't, to do an autopsy. Get to the bottom of it. My blood tests all came back. So I had, and I'm digressing a little here, but I had my blood tests done because I really wanted to be sure. You know, I couldn't go around saying to someone I had a vaccine injury if I didn't know. So I had all my blood tests done, and my blood tests came back with 3,102.8 spike protein antibodies in my blood per milliliter of blood. And that was 2 or 3 years afterwards. Now, it's always been my understanding that when we get the vaccine, it creates these spike protein antibodies in our system and they fight the virus and then they disappear, they're dispersed. I mean, I just can't understand, and no one's ever given me an explanation why there are still so many in my system.
I saw that in one of your clips, that's 10 times the antibodies that you'd expect if you had a raging COVID infection.
Exactly.
I think we're laymen, Barry, but I think we can connect the dots, can't we?
No one seems to want to. Well, with the exception of people like Alison, in the general population, it seems they don't want to. I think we've reached somewhere where it's like an acronym when you're in helicopter rescue. They use an acronym called a PNR, so you hit a point of no return. I think we've hit that point of no return where we can't come back from it.
Yes, because they're so steeped in blood.
Absolutely. How do you admit that to a population of what you've done? Would it potentially crash your population?
You can't. Because they say the admission would destroy the authority of all the institutions.
Trust would be completely gone. And mine is.
Mine is. They also have this problem that they've not only made the error, they've compounded the error by covering it up.
Absolutely.
And that, I mean, to me, that seems almost the worst part of it is, you know, from speaking to injured people, it's the gaslighting, it's the ignoring, it's the completely dismissing them that, you know, repeatedly on and on for months on end, you know, with their doctors, with ACC, that, you know, that just hugely, well, you know, makes the original injury much worse when you're, just it's denied, it's you're dismissed, all your concerns are dismissed, your questions are dismissed.
COVID came from the sick and the elderly, but the vaccine seems to come for the fit and young. It's these healthy people that it whacks over like Barry, isn't it? Is that the case, or is it my imagination?
Well, certainly, yes, people who were not going to be adversely affected by a COVID infection have been hugely affected by the vaccine. But, you know, I think as well, there are a number of elderly people who, you know, it's much easier to fob off an elderly person's death because, you know, there might be a heart attack, it might be a stroke. But, you know, I think a significant number of heart attacks and strokes in elderly people are probably jab-related. And the thing is, nobody's assessing it. You know, that's the thing. I mean, if you were doing proper pharmacovigilance, then every death in a vaccinated person would be assessed. Now, they're not all going to be due to the vaccine, but unless everyone's assessed, how do you know? How do you know? And I mean, what are they actually doing? You know, I've watched Dr. Arne Burkhardt, the German pathologist who unfortunately died last year, but he was doing autopsies on people and actually looking for the spike protein. Well, in New Zealand, that's not happening. I mean, and I asked, you know, I asked in 2021, if somebody has an autopsy after they've died following the vaccine, what are they looking for? How do you decide whether it's a vaccine injury or not? And there are no criteria to determine, is it a vaccine injury? So, I mean, if Barry did die, and hopefully he won't die. You know, if an autopsy was done, what are they going to look for? You know, the staining for spike protein is not available in New Zealand. How are you going to determine whether it's a vaccine injury? I mean, certainly Arne Burkhardt, this German pathologist, did provide suggestions and his experience, like, for example, an aortic dissection. He said the spike protein causes inflammation in the wall of the aorta, which is the big main blood vessel in the abdomen. And then that inflammation in the wall of the blood vessel makes it weak. And then it's much more likely to burst. And so he could demonstrate in people that had died from a ruptured aorta that there was spike protein there, that there was a large amount of inflammation in the wall of the aorta, and that was what had caused it to rupture. But, you know, that's not happening in New Zealand, that sort of investigation. You know, I've seen post-mortem reports of people who've died of ruptured aortic aneurysms, and the fact of the recent vaccination isn't mentioned either by the pathologist, the doctor who looks at the body, or the coroner, the lawyer who determines the cause of death. You know, they're not even mentioning the fact of vaccination. So how can they look for problems?
How do you keep so calm and don't get angry at your colleagues and your profession?
I don't know that I'm totally calm. I guess I'm frustrated. I'm frustrated that that more aren't prepared, you know, even just to ask questions or to have a discussion. I mean, I don't know everything, and I'm a GP. I'm not a pharmacovigilance expert. I'm not a coroner. I'm not a pathologist. But it would be really useful to be able to ask questions of these people and find out, well, what has been going on and what should be going on. I mean, I've got my opinions about what I thought would go on from the point of view of a GP. But when I've tried to figure out what sort of monitoring and pharmacovigilance has been going on, it's been, you know, impossible to get to the bottom of it. Barry, you know, how things are determined.
Barry, you're going on the roadshow to all the venues?
Yes, I am.
I'll get to meet you in person in Queenstown. I'm looking forward to that. To shake your hand. Now, do you get angry?
Oh, I've run the gauntlet.
I bet.
I think I'm back to anger and frustration right now.
You must be.
Sorry, Ronnie, you first.
You must be an extraordinarily determined, hardworking man to achieve what you've done physically with your body and then to be in acting and film directing. Both tough things.
I wish I could tell you I was a film director. I'm a wannabe film director. Oh, I'm more of I'm a screenwriter, so I'm more of an auteur filmmaker, but I've placed in the top 10 contests in the world for screenwriting. So I'm in an industry that you have to have determination and you have to drive away through the peaks and the troughs.
Yes.
Otherwise it makes you insane.
Yes. So you've not had a, you know, you're driven, like you're extraordinary in the gym. You're not playing around when you go to the gym.
No, I was a competition bodybuilder for a lot of years.
There you go.
I think Arnold Schwarzenegger put it best. He said, it really teaches you discipline. And I'm ex-military, so I was 13 years Royal Australian Air Force with the police dogs. I learned a lot of discipline through the gym, a lot of discipline through the military. I apply that in my personal life.
No, thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is to be so admired for what he could do.
I almost met Arnold once, almost at Gold's Gym in Santa Monica.
The original?
Oh, sorry, in Venice. Yeah, he was walking out of Venice Beach Gym when I was walking in. He gave me a little nod as I walked through the door. And I got to the reception counter and the guy at the counter said to me, I must have noticed like this exchange. He said, listen, if you want to get a selfie with Arnold, wait till he finishes training. And then when he's done, he'll be more than happy to help you out, but don't interfere with him while he's training. I said, well, I looked at him and said, what if he wants to get one with me? And the guy was laughing away and somewhere across the gym, someone yelled out, hey, Lugo. And they came running over and said, can I get a selfie with you? And the guy at the counter's like, what? What?
Oh my goodness.
It was just that perfect timing.
Mind you, I loved and admired Arnie, loved his movies. And loved his body working books and his ethics and his outlook and his sheer toughness, and he didn't like girly men and he was just great. Then
yeah, he got me exactly where you're governor, going to.
Becomes governor, becomes woke, and then tells everyone to go and get the jab.
Yeah, screw your freedoms.
Screw your freedoms.
Yeah.
I'll never forgive him.
No, neither would I. He came back and he did apologize after that, but once it's out there, it's uncaged. You can't shut the cage door again. No, like Jimmy Kimmel, do you remember what he said?
Yeah, no.
So Jimmy Kimmel, I would love to meet Jimmy Kimmel. I would love to take him into the ring on a yellow ribbon fight and beat the shit out of him. But Jimmy Kimmel said that if two guys are walking to the hospital, one of them walks in, he's vaccinated, the other one's unvaccinated. You say, come in, vaccinated guy, die wheezy.
Yes, you don't come back from that.
No.
Because that shows deep into their soul.
It's a lack of empathy, a lack of compassion.
Mm. And you
a
can't
lack of free thought.
Screw your freedoms, die wheezy. Unbelievable.
Yeah, there are so many of them out there who have. I still get gaslit on a professional website, so I'm on LinkedIn. I was getting gaslit by English doctors. It was like a group of them. They were like a pack of rabid dogs.
I got to apologize to you because I don't watch TV. So I don't know those shows that you're in. I feel as though now I should be more impressed than I am.
Nah,
I was just impressed by your achievements. What do you want to get out of the roadshow in terms of achievement for New Zealand?
In all honesty, if I got to one person to convince them never to be vaccinated with this stuff again, not mRNA, never to touch that again, and it saved one person's life, then that's a job done.
That's great. Where do you think this ends, Barry?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I hear people online, so Kiwis, who are talking about their seventh booster shot, and if you can't learn from the fact that one or two didn't work for you and you had to have seven, how do you save yourself? Where do I think it ends? mRNA is still getting pushed and they're still building that factory in Australia at the moment. I just can't see past the insanity of it.
I've come to conclude that it's evil and you don't have to agree with me, but I can't believe that it's not sort of supernatural what's happened, because I just can't imagine how collectively people like Arnold Schwarzenegger, like Kimmel, but just doctors can be so blind, so lacking in empathy, without actually having something evil come over the world. You know what I mean? I just, it's not the world I imagined we living in.
No, I completely agree with you.
The Roadshow, everyone. Man, I'm going to this. It's roadshow24.nz. You go on there and you register. It's for a whole day, right, Alison?
Yes, yeah, a whole day of speakers. Yes, it'll be fairly intense, I think.
Yeah, and there's morning tea, lunch and afternoon tea included in your registration fee, which I can't see what that is on the page, but if you're keen, you'll look it up and decide whether it's for you. You can register on there. I'm definitely going to the one in Queenstown. Here's where they are. The Dunedin Centre on Saturday the 9th of November. If you have an interest in this, and you do because you're listening to the show, get along if you're anywhere near Dunedin, Saturday the 9th of November. In Queenstown, it's the Ridges Hotel on Monday the 11th of November. Then the Rutherford Hotel, Nelson, on Wednesday the 13th of November. It's the Intercontinental Hotel in Wellington on Friday the 15th of November. Don't have my thing of saying, oh, I've got the kids, I can't go to the conference, and then have this missing out, because my experience is it's not just the people speaking, it's the crowd. And you meet the most wonderful people at these events. Wonderful, wonderful people in the crowd. I don't know where else that happens. And you have people talking of their experiences, which parallel your experiences of this, and your confusion and your bewilderment at what has happened to our great country and indeed around the world. And you feel sane, and you feel as though there's hope, because we are going to get to the end of this. None of us can quite picture it, but we have to get to a point where people start putting up their hand and saying, no, this was wrong. It might take a few years for those in charge to leave and a new group to come through, a new group of politicians, a new group of bureaucrats, medical association people, and they want to actually clear the books, because they don't want to be there and part of the cover-up. That's my theory. Alison, does that sound reasonable?
Well, yes, I'm not sure how long it's going to take, but you're probably right in the years. And yes, we need new people in all of our institutions.
Because you don't, if you're a new person, you come in and you perpetuate this, then you're part of the cover-up and you could be caught. You could be the one when it blows up. I don't know. Barry, what do you think of that theory?
Well, mate, I've spent 4 years pretty much being isolated by everybody that I've tried to tell the story to. I think that something like this is going to open the doors up where more and more and more people get to hear it. And
yes.
But the more they keep us in isolation, the more we feel we're completely and absolutely alone.
Get along to the roadshow. I can't wait. I was actually excited about meeting Mary Hobbs, but now I'm excited about reacquainting myself with Alison Goodwin. I'm very excited about meeting Barry and shaking his hand and hearing his story. And I'm very excited about meeting the people there. the people that are awake, and to feel part of something and to feel less bewildered. Dr. Goodwin, thank you for your work.
Thank you for having me on, Rodney.
Oh, well, that's so insignificant compared to what you do. It's so insignificant, but thank you for that. But your bravery and your courage of the doctor speaking out is so extraordinarily admirable. And this experience to me is still going on, and it was our generation's wars, like our World War II, what we've been through. And I didn't appreciate that till we're further down. And there were these heroes, because I never had the courage to step up like you did. And I was amazed, because I was following all the news, and I saw poorly of Dr. Matt Shelton because of the way the headlines went, even me, because propaganda works. They slant everything against you, and they poison the well about what people think. And then when you see it, you realize what's gone on, and you realize how incredibly brave you have been. Truly, just accept that. And then to be caring for patients like Barry, where no one else does. In fact, it almost seemed like they want to kill him, given what they prescribed. Barry, thank you for coming on our show.
No, thank you for having me, Rodney.
I know you've got a lot more to say, because there's a lot more to your story than what we could cover. And so I'm very much looking forward to you, to meeting you and hearing you speak. I have no words to cover off what's happened to you. None. But I believe in the human spirit, and I believe now that there will be an ultimate judgment. And you're on the right side.
I just hope it opens the doors up for other people to speak.
There you go. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. You're on Reality Check Radio. That was Real Talk. Get along to the Safe and Effective Roadshow. And it'll be amazing. It's very, very hard, isn't it, to hear this stuff and not get emotional. Here's some texts. NZDSOS are doing a fantastic job, thank you. They're a sad reminder of how some are willing to accept a science professional who don't agree with science. Oxymoron. Thanks again to NZDSOS. Hi, Rodney. I collapsed 30 plus times with heart issues since the second vax. I ended up in an ambulance this year, paid to see a cardiologist, and told him this is because of the vax. He got really angry at me and told me to get over it. I cried with frustration. I hate the medical system, all of them. It's called eugenics, Rodney. This was not an error, it was intentional. Hi, Rodney. Arnie's vegan now. That's not possible. No! Arnie's vegan? Oh, my goodness. As in the Game Changers film by James Cameron. Regards, Tricia. Oh, thank you. Rodney, they've got the bulk of the population dull and stupid on drugs and meds of all kinds, including Prozac, statins, benzos like Valium derivatives and junk food and entertainment distractions, TV, movies, internet, etc. Bread and circuses. And then the people will lose their judgment. and critical thinking and independent decision-making powers. Well, ain't that the truth? Ain't that the truth? Now we're opened up for talkback. It's only going to work if you call. So give us a call, 0800 20 57 57. Talk about anything. But first, we've got a break. Ah, I got you. I'm still getting the hang of doing this live because, well, Barry would have been an expert at it. Just someone waves their hands and he can do it. Oh, man, I can't wait to see you all.
You too.
Thank you so much for coming on, and I will let you go. And no doubt
we'll
talk about it.
Bye, Alison.
Yes, bye, Barry. We'll meet you soon.
Nice sharing space with you.
Yeah.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Good. Thanks, bye-bye. Guys. See you.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.